the Bad Christian, or sermons on the seven deadly sins and the different sins against God and our neighbor which flow therefrom, Father Francis Hunault, translated from the original German edition of Cologne, 1740, by Father J. Allen, Imprimatur, Bishop James D. Ricard. On the irreparable injury caused by defaming another's character, preached on the fifth Sunday after Pentecost. Go first to be reconciled to thy brother, St. Matthew 5:24. Introduction. It is a very difficult thing when people are once embittered against each other for them to be thoroughly reconciled, and yet it is a necessary thing to salvation, for without it all one's confessions and communions are sacrilegious and cannot merit the grace of forgiveness. I have lately, my dear brethren, spoken of the vice of defaming our neighbor, and have shown how grievous it is, because it violates Christian charity and injures our neighbor's fair fame. There is still another point to be explained in order to deter you all the more from this fearful vice and to show those who are guilty in this respect what they have to do. And what is that? Go first to be reconciled to thy brother. Have you said anything to injure his fair fame? Go to be reconciled to him and to all those whose honor you have attacked. Make good the harm you have done. Alas, I shudder and am filled with apprehension when I think of this. I would rather not be obliged to speak of it. How easy it is to offend in this matter of defaming our neighbor, but how hard and difficult to atone for the injury done. This I shall now proceed to show. Amongst all sins, there is none so difficult to atone for and to make reparation for as the sin of injuring our neighbor's character. Therefore, we must avoid it with the greatest care. Such is the whole subject. If there are any here present who must acknowledge that they are guilty of this sin, I would ask them to repress until the end of the sermon the fears and apprehensions that will likely arise in their minds, for they may hear something before they go away, and after they leave, after they have well understood the subject, which will console them. But do thou, Lord, inspire me and all here present with a solitary dread of that vice, and with a firm resolution never to be guilty of it again. This we ask of thee through the intercession of Mary and of the holy angels guardian. If he who has defamed another wishes to be reconciled to God and to his neighbor and to atone for his sin, besides a true repentance, a firm purpose of amendment, and a candid declaration of his sin and confession, he must make complete reparation for the injury he has inflicted on his neighbor's character, whether he has simply lessened that character or taken it away altogether, provided such reparation be possible. This truth, my dear brethren, stands in no need of proof. The sin will not be forgiven unless that which is unjustly taken away be restored to its lawful owner. If that axiom holds good, as no sensible man can doubt, of mere material goods, so that he who has committed a theft cannot hope for pardon, no matter how often he repents of and confesses his sin, unless he is firmly resolved to make restitution as soon as he can. How much more, then, must it not be true of the greatest and most valued of all natural possessions, namely, the fair fame and good name, which are even more prized than life itself? But, just heaven, how fearfully difficult it is to make this reparation as it ought to be made. So difficult that it is generally the next thing to an impossibility. Why so? For these three reasons. If I have stolen money from a man, or otherwise inflicted some material injury on him, I can easily calculate the amount of harm done, or the sum that I possess unjustly, and so I can find out without difficulty what restitution I must make unless indeed I have committed repeated perjuries in all kinds of ways and in all sorts of people who are known to me and have continued doing so for many years, as is often the case in buying and selling and other business transactions. But even then, I need only have a firm purpose of making restitution. The only real difficulty I have to overcome is that of conquering my greed of gain and giving up freely all that I have unjustly acquired. And when I have once made that firm resolution, there are 100 ways in which I can make due restitution and fulfill my obligation without putting myself to shame. If I know who the rightful owner is, I can make restitution to him secretly through my confessor. If I do not know and have no hope of ever finding out who he is, I can give to the poor what I possess unjustly. But under all these circumstances, it is quite different with regard to making reparation for injuries inflicted on the fair fame of others. For in the first place, the reparation must be in proportion to the amount stolen or to the injury committed. That is, I must give back as much as I have stolen and make good all the harm I have done. But you can find out that proportion in the matter of injury inflicted on another's character, so as to be able to say, so much and no more have I taken away from that person's good name. You have, for instance, said of that lawyer, which was not yet publicly known, that he took bribes from the opposing party, that he spun out suits as long as possible so as to make more money by them, that there is no use in going to him unless with a full purse, etc. You have said of that neighbor or man of business that he cannot be trusted, and that he cheats people, as you know by experience. Of that doctor, that he knows nothing, that he is always drunk when visiting a patient, etc. Of that young girl, that she makes herself too common, and that you saw her one evening acting improperly, etc. Of that official, that he has acted greatly against his employer's interests. Of that servant, that he or she is unfaithful and takes things secretly out of the house, that you would not have such people in your employment, etc. Now, what you say in that way to another, or to two or three people, they tell afterwards to others, and these latter spread it still further, so that the evil report against your neighbor soon becomes known to a great number. Sometimes a dog goes quietly along the street, doing no harm to anyone, when suddenly some mischievous boys begin to shout and to throw stones at him. At once the whole neighborhood is in an uproar, and everyone runs after the poor animal. Then the dogs run out of the houses. Even the little lap dogs are not to be held back, and though they are afraid to join the pursuit, they add to the confusion by barking with the others. Thus a whole crowd of people rush after the poor dog, some beat him with sticks, others throw stones at him. One says that he must be mad, another that he has severely bitten a child, a third that he has stolen some meat in the neighborhood. Meanwhile, the poor dog's only fault is his misfortune in meeting the mischievous boys who occasioned the whole uproar. So it is also with the unfortunate and sometimes completely innocent man who comes across some ill-tongued person. That lawyer, that businessman, that official, that young girl, that servant, who, wherever they go, they have a bad name and everybody speaks ill against them. And how did that come to pass? They came across some mischievous boys, someone who either through malice or loquacity related something bad about them, which he either heard or saw or merely suspected them to be guilty of. The report was spread from one person to another, from one street to another, till it became the talk of the town. See, O ill-tongued man, what mischief you have done by your imprudence. you are to blame for it all. You were the first to cause your neighbor's reputation to suffer, and no matter how many others have helped to spread the report, the origin of it is to be traced to you and to those who have heard it. Some have attached perhaps but little faith to it, and this were more credulous in believing it, while others again have, on account of it, lost all respect for the person about whom you spread it. Now, if you wish to atone for your fault, you are bound in conscience to restore your neighbor's good name with all those people to whom you have defamed it, and in proportion as you have defamed it to each one, so that he will enjoy just the same good reputation as before, provided that it is possible for you to make such reparation, and that your neighbor's good name has not already been restored by others. But who does not see that that is almost an impossibility to do this? For you would have to find out how far the uncharitable report has spread, how many people have accepted it, and how far they have believed it. And you would have to go to each and every one of those people and persuade them to have their former good opinion of him whom you have maligned. But you ask, how can I do that? Nevertheless, according to the teaching of theologians, you are bound absolutely to do it if you wish to make reparation for the harm you have done by your slanderous tongue. And this, I say, is the obligation which is so hard of fulfillment that it is never properly fulfilled. But there is still another difficulty, another obligation you have to attend to. And what is that? Besides the loss of character you have occasioned, you have also been the cause of a loss in business or in the material concerns to those you have maligned. That lawyer may have lost his clients, as people are afraid to trust him any longer in a matter of importance. That man of business has lost credit, his customers abandon him. That doctor is no longer employed, as people are afraid to trust him. That young girl might have married well, but now no one will have anything to say to her. That official is dismissed. That servant cannot find a place anymore. Count up now, if you can, the amount of injury you have done in each case. All this you are bound to make reparation for, if you possibly can, if you wish to make full atonement before God and man for what you have done. But how difficult that is! It is almost an impossibility, for how can one find out the exact amount of harm done by slander to a neighbor's character and to his worldly prosperity? Suppose now that you have calculated exactly all the injury you have done your neighbor's character and the amount of loss you have caused him to suffer in the business. Are you still really determined to make full reparation? Then if what you have said of your neighbor is false, all theologians agree in saying that you are bound to contradict it before everyone to whom you said it, and in whose estimation your neighbor's character has suffered in consequence. And you must say to each one of them, what I told you of so-and-so is not true. It is a lie. But if they refuse to believe your retraction, you are bound to confirm it with an oath if necessary, although your own honor suffers and you are put to confusion thereby. If what you say is true, but not yet publicly known, you are bound to do all you can to restore your neighbor's character before all those in whose presence you have injured it. For instance, if you really think you can do any good thereby, you might say, I did so-and-so a great injury when I spoke of him in that way. Do not believe it. People often say through thoughtlessness more than they ought. Or else you must speak in that man's praise whenever you get a chance, until you have completely restored his good name. And what a difficult thing it is to make up one's mind to do this. How one must fight against and do violence to one's inclinations. But what will it be when, in addition to that obligation, there is also another, namely, that of making good all temporal losses caused by slander. It is hard enough to have to part with money that one has acquired unjustly, and there are many who deliberately renounce their hopes of heaven and choose hell rather than do it. But what an iron resolution it must require to disgrace oneself, to swallow one's own words, and to acknowledge one's own guilt, besides making reparation for the material losses caused. Many and many a slanderer there is in the world, but you will hardly find one in 100 who makes reparation as he ought for the injury done his neighbor's good name. And you must confess that this is literally true, my dear brethren. How many have you not heard during your lives speaking ill of others and injuring their reputation more or less seriously? But can you remember even one who came back to restore his neighbor's character? In spite of the numbers of confessions in which people accuse themselves of slander, there is hardly ever a case in which due reparation is made. Finally, suppose that you think to yourself, as every good Christian who values his soul must think, no matter what it costs, I will not lose my soul, but will bring it safely to God in heaven, and therefore I will do my very best to make reparation for the injury I've inflicted on my neighbor's good character, and to make good all the material losses he has suffered thereby, although by doing so I disgrace myself and lose my own honor. What a brave and Christian resolution that would be. But now I ask you, how are you going to do it? When you have done all in your power to restore your neighbor's good name with all those before whom you have defamed it and who heard the evil report from you, are you still sure of succeeding? Especially if what you have said is true, and if many have already heard it, you will say, I have wronged so-and-so by my thoughtless talk. I am very sorry for it. You must not have a bad opinion of him on account of what I have said, etc. But what will you effect thereby? If you say that to a pious and sensible man, he will think that you are doing quite right in acknowledging your fault and in trying to make due atonement for it. But he will not on that account lose the bad opinion he has formed of the person whom you have slandered. He will think there must be some ground for that opinion, or else you would contradict your slander even on oath. If you say it to other talkative people, they will give you the same answer that the high priest gave to Judas when he brought back the 30 pieces of silver, saying, I have sinned in betraying innocent blood. But they answered him, What is that to us? Look thou to it. You will begin to praise the man you have defamed and to speak well of him whenever you can. Quite right. That is one of the best means under such circumstances to make reparation for the injury inflicted. But what a difference there is to us mortals between hearing our neighbor praised and hearing him slandered. You found people enough to believe the slander. Will you be likely to find as many to believe the praise? And will they be as ready to believe the praise as they were to believe the slander? We easily forget what is praiseworthy in others. But if we hear anything to their disadvantage, we remember it a long time. The evil report that you originated is now in all probability spread abroad, and they who hear you speak in praise of the person you have defamed will hardly be so quick in spreading the good report as the bad one. However that may be, you will never succeed in so completely restoring your neighbor's good character that some of the slander will not stick to him more or less. See now how difficult, nay almost impossible, it is to make due reparation for the injury inflicted on your neighbor's honor, and to make that atonement for your sin which is, absolutely speaking, required, and how it is to resolve to make a reparation of the kind. See now how difficult, nay almost impossible, it is to make due reparation for the injury inflicted on your neighbor's honor, and to make that atonement for your sin which is, absolutely speaking, required. How difficult it is to resolve to make a reparation of the kind. How impossible it is, humanly speaking, to know how much reparation one is bound to make, and how almost impossible it is, in spite of all one's efforts, to make complete reparation. Oh my God, and what a lady brink those talkative and scandalous tongues of ours involve us. How easy it is to get into it, how difficult to get out of it. The word falls from the lips without any trouble, but what great art is required to retract it? With reason does the wise preacher compare the slanderous tongues to a venomous serpent. If a serpent bite in silence, he is nothing better that backbiteth secretly. Some serpents bite so quickly that one hardly feels the fatal wound at first. In the same way, a slanderous tongue inflicts a fatal wound on a man's good name without the sufferer being able to tell how or by whom he is injured. There are serpents so venomous that, once their poison is infused into the blood, nothing but amputation of the injured limb will save the person whom they have bitten. The same may safely be said of slanderous tongues. Once they have poured out their venom, it is almost impossible to heal the wound they have inflicted, that is, to restore the reputation they have ruined. Moses, in order to convince King Pharaoh that he was sent by the true God, threw his rod on the ground, and it was instantly changed into a serpent. But when he took the serpent into his hand, it became a rod again. Pharaoh's magicians tried their skill in the same way, but not with the same success. They changed their rods into serpents, but with all their art, they could not change the serpents back into rods. There you have a specimen of your art, O slanderous and ill-tongued people. By your uncharitable talk, you cause your neighbor to lose his good reputation and to appear in the eyes of others like a loathsome serpent. But you are utterly unable to restore the good name you have taken away and to make full reparation for the injury you have done his honor. Such is the case, and therefore the Holy Ghost warned us by the wise ecclesiastic as to be careful to avoid the vice of slander. Take heed lest you slip with thy tongue, and thy fall be incurable unto death. What is he then to do, my dear brethren, if there be any such here present, who knows that he is guilty of having inflicted a serious injury on his neighbor's character? On the one hand, the sin will not be forgiven him unless he is firmly resolved to make full reparation for the wrong he has done as soon as possible. On the other hand, as we have just seen, the difficulty of making this reparation verges almost on the impossible when the evil report has once been spread abroad. What hope of salvation, then, can there be for such a man? Must he despair? Must I say to him what Father Alphonsus de Castro once said to a nobleman who accused himself of having said publicly in company that he had sinned with a certain noble lady, whose name he mentioned, although what he said was quite false, as history avers? "Away with you, you are damned," said the confessor to him, knowing well that the nobleman could never bring himself to retract his own words in the same company, and to confess even on oath that he had told a lie. And the event proved that the confessor's fears were justified. Must I, too, launch forth the same thunderbolt against all slanderers and say to each one of them, "Away with you, you are lost. Your confessions will not avail you. There is no help for you." No, things have not gone so far as that yet. If you are quite certain that you have injured your neighbor's good honor and injured it seriously, and that you knew that you were doing wrong when you were speaking against him, then you must relate the whole matter with all its circumstances to an experienced confessor who is able to advise you, and he will tell you what to do and will help you out of the difficulty. Meanwhile, as far as the injury done to your neighbor's honor is concerned, I must tell you, in order to relieve your mind somewhat, and to give you a little consolation, that there are many circumstances in which we are not obliged to make reparation for the injury which we think we have done our neighbor's honor. Mind, my dear brethren, that I am speaking of the injury done to his honor alone, for it is a different thing altogether with regard to the material loss we have caused him. In the first place, I am not bound to make reparation if I have just reasons for thinking that they who heard me speaking ill of my neighbor did not believe me, or did not look on what I said as dishonorable to him. Sometimes, too, there are people to be found who are publicly known as being apt to say anything that comes into their minds without any regard for the truth. No sensible man would believe what such people say. Again, when they who are under the influence of violent anger utter all sorts of calumnies against their opponents, in such a way that it is evident that they are speaking out of the bitterness of their hearts, out of hatred and vindictiveness, it is clear that no sensible man will believe what they say. For if a person speaks ill of another before people who, whether through simplicity or through wickedness, think little of the vice that the other is accused of, look on it as no dishonor, or if our neighbor's character is impugned in the company of pious people, who as good Christians ought to put the best interpretations in everything they hear, and therefore refuse to believe anything prejudicial to another's good name. In all these cases, there is no doubt that he who has spoken ill of his neighbor is guilty of sin, but, as a general rule, he is freed from the obligation of making reparation. And why? Because he has not really injured his neighbor's honor in the estimation of those who are listening to him. A thief wishes to steal. To that end, he places the ladder against the window of a house, climbs in during the night, and breaks open the chest, but finds nothing, so that he has to go back empty-handed. He has committed a theft in desire and intention, and has therefore sinned grievously against God and his neighbor, but he is not bound to restitution, because he has not actually stolen anything or injured anyone's property. And so it is, too, with those who, through wantonness, wickedness, hatred, or talkativeness, try to injure their neighbor's character. They commit a grievous sin, but since, under the circumstances mentioned above, no one believes what they say, they have not really injured their neighbor and are therefore not bound to make reparation. Secondly, I am not bound to make good my neighbor's injured character if he of whom I have spoken uncharitably has publicly justified himself and proved his innocence, or has otherwise regained his good name in that particular matter in which I have spoken ill of him. Thus, it often happens that a servant, a man of business, or an official is accused of some grievous violation of duty, although afterwards his innocence is clearly proven. In a case of that kind, I am not bound to make further reparation. Just as a thief is not bound to make restitution if the lawful owner has succeeded in getting possession of his property again. Thirdly, if I have revealed a secret and disgraceful crime of my neighbor, and the same vice afterwards comes to be publicly known, not through me, nor through those to whom I revealed it, but in some other way, I am freed from the obligation of making reparation, because he is publicly dishonored and has thus lost his right to his good name. Much less am I bound to make reparation if his crime was already known to only a small number of people, because he had already lost his good name before I spoke of him. Fourthly, suppose that two women or two sworn enemies are quarreling. They growl and snarl at each other like dogs. They hurl at each other all the abusive epithets they can think of, without caring whether they are true or false. And thus they publicly disgrace themselves before a crowd of people. The question now is, what are they to do to restore each other's good name? This theologians generally answer by saying that they sin grievously in using contemptuously expressions towards each other, but since they both suffer the same amount of injury, neither is bound to make reparation to the other. Fifthly, if a long time has elapsed since a slander was uttered, so that there is a moral certainty that it has fallen into oblivion, and that no one thinks of it any longer, I am freed from the obligation of making reparation. For when people forget the slander, they are as if they had never heard it, and time itself has restored my neighbor's injured character. Nay, in a case of that kind, I am bound to keep silent so as not to remind people of what they have forgotten, and to avoid doing my neighbor further harm by my efforts to make reparation to him. Sixthly, I am freed from this obligation if I perceive certainly that all my retractions, excuses, praises, and other means that I am ready to make use of will have no effect, and that people will put no faith in them. Again, I am excused if I cannot make reparation without endangering my life. The same is to be said if they to whom I have spoken ill of my neighbor are dead, or have gone away to such a distance that I cannot retract my words in their presence, and that the fact of their knowing what I told them can no longer be prejudicial to my neighbor. Seventhly, if I have not committed a sin before God by my uncharitable talk, as is generally the case with pious people who inadvertently let fall a word now and then that is injurious to their neighbor, theologians generally say that I am not bound in that case to make reparation if I cannot do so without grave inconvenience, unless I have publicly told a lie against my neighbor, in which case I am bound to retract it. Meanwhile, everyone who is in the habit of speaking thoughtlessly of the faults of others is bound under pain of sin to correct that bad habit and to restrain his tongue. Eighthly, I am freed from the obligation of making reparation if he whom I have slandered renounces his right, supposing that he can conscientiously do so, and does not exact any retraction from me. As far as I am personally concerned, my dear brethren, if anyone has spoken ill of me, I forgive him from my heart, and he need not go to the least trouble to make reparation, provided what he has said is injurious to my personal honor alone and not to the holy order to which I belong. Finally, there is no obligation to make reparation if it is morally impossible for me to make it and to restore my neighbor's good name. Thus, as in the case mentioned already, if I have published another's secret crime and it is not known to a number of people, generally speaking, it would be morally impossible for me to find out all who have heard of it and to restore my neighbor's good name in the estimation of every one of them. Finally, there is no obligation to make reparation if it is morally impossible for me to make it and to restore my neighbor's good name. Thus, as in the case mentioned already, If I have published another secret crime, and it is now known to a number of people, generally speaking, it would be morally impossible for me to find out all who have heard of it, and to restore my neighbor's good name in the estimation of every one of them, so that I must be satisfied with speaking well of him whenever I can, especially before those in whose presence I first spread the bad report about him. And since I cannot restore his character fully, I must all the more deplore the sin I have committed, because my mischievous tongue has done my neighbor an injury that I am now quite unable, though ever so willing, to make reparation for. From all this, my dear brethren, it is evident that we must carefully avoid speaking ill of our neighbor, and that if we wish to save our souls, we must restrain our tongues whenever his faults and failings are made the subject of conversation in our presence. That is the reason why I am now speaking on this subject for the second time, namely, that they may have a deep and lasting horror of a sin that is so grievous and so difficult to atone for. Take heed, is my final warning in the words of the Holy Ghost, both to you and to my soul. Take heed, lest thou slip with thy tongue, and thy fall be incurable unto death. Keep a guard on your tongue, that it may not lead you to a mortal fall from which you can never properly rise again. Yes, I will profit by this warning in future. Each one of you, my dear brethren, can repeat mentally with me what follows by way of conclusion. Woe to you, my tongue, if you should betray me into uttering a word against my neighbor. With my own teeth will I take vengeance on you, dear Christians, with whom I shall afterwards enter into conversation. I beg of you, one and all, if you hear a single word escaping me against my neighbor's honor, admonish me at once freely, and tell me to hold my tongue, and not to speak in that way, no matter what confusion you put me to by doing so. And thou, O Jesus, who hast said, forgive, and you shall be forgiven, if I have often through malice, hatred, envy, or thoughtlessness spoken against the honor of my brethren and sisters, and against the charity I owe them, and if the evil has already gone so far, as is, alas, only too often the case, that I cannot now make full reparation for it, what am I to do? I have no resource left but with heartfelt sorrow to beg thee and my neighbor to forgive me. Yes, O Lord, I am sorry. All you whom I have offended in this way, forgive me, for God's sake, for the sake of him to whom we pray daily. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive them that trespass against us. And I, O Lord, lay at thy feet and give over to thee all the reparation that may perhaps be due to me from those who have assailed my good name. I forgive them from my heart, and demand no restitution from them. But do thou forgive the sins that I have committed in this way against my neighbor? I beg of thee to do so by the bitter gall wherewith thy sacred tongue was tortured on the cross, in order to atone for and to correct the sins of our tongues. And I implore of thee to keep a restraint on this slippery tongue of mine, that I may never again fall into sins that are so grievous and so difficult to atone for. I will do my best to guard against them. Do thou help me. Amen.